Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Dave Venturella, Executive Director of the Secure Communities Program at the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Also joining our conversation from IBM is David Lipstein. Dave, ICE has a number of programs available to provide assistance to state and local law enforcement, such as the 287G program, which I believe cross-designates local officers to enforce immigration law, and the criminal alien program. How does Secure Communities differ from, as well as complement, these programs?
Well, the primary difference with Secure Communities is it's an information sharing initiative, at least the biometric interoperability. That's a tool that would help generate leads for our officers and agents to include our cross-designated 287G agents. So very different. Obviously, we're talking about a technology that shares information. It doesn't convey any immigration authority. It alone doesn't arrest people. It's merely providing information so our folks can act upon and hopefully make correct decisions quicker and, again, more reliable identifications of individuals that law enforcement encounters. So as for me, I think it complements what our enforcement officers are doing because it is providing that information to them, I think, in a more comprehensive way. No longer do they have to search for information on an individual in a number of different databases. It's pulling this information in. It's also tying it to the criminal history and the criminal activity which triggered the fingerprints. So you're getting all this information at once, and it should help the officers then, again, make the right decision whether or not to pursue enforcement action and then really speed up that process if they do decide to do that. The other piece of Secure Communities, again, it's a strategy. It starts with the strategy, and it looks at the identification side of things, but then it also looks beyond that. It looks at, okay, once people are identified, then how do you move them from identification to the arrest phase? How do you move them from the arrest phase to the detention phase? And then from the detention phase to the hearing phase, and then ultimately, how do you execute a removal order? How do you get them out of the country? And so it looks at all of those different processes, it looks at all of those different systems, and tries to think about, okay, how do we leverage technology to improve these particular processes? It looks at, do we need additional resources, which could then trigger a discussion of, do we have to cross-designate more local law enforcement to help us in the identification of criminal aliens and overall improving our ability to identify and remove criminal aliens. So the strategy is very broad. It looks at all of our capabilities. It looks at existing policy. It may also trigger, you know, future policy changes on how we leverage certain authorities or certain capabilities and other types of information sharing technology. So very, very big difference in specifically 287G is it's a statute, it's authority that allows ICE to basically deputize law enforcement, sworn law enforcement officers to carry out some of the immigration authority, where Secure Communities is, again, like I said, a strategy, and then one of the cornerstone initiatives is the information sharing initiative, and that should help at least any immigration enforcement official to carry out their duties, I think, more efficiently.
You talked earlier about the increase in deportations over the last few years. Given the increased efforts, what has been done to analyze how that will impact partner agencies, other departments at the federal level, state and local entities across the criminal alien enforcement lifecycle? And how are you working with those various agencies and partner agencies and state and local entities to ensure the appropriate infrastructure and resources are in place?
Right. Well, you know, we've done some forecasting and some modeling and simulation of when an individual goes through that process, what does it look like? And then when you start to add more people through that process, where are the bottlenecks? Where are the choke points? And so we've done that. Where in the past, at least in law enforcement, at least in my experience, that was often a nice thing to do or a nice thing to want to do, but you never did it. And so I've had the opportunity to kind of think through that through some of the challenges, and then bringing in some very smart folks who can help us model and simulate the process and then understand some of those challenges that we have. Since we've done that, we've identified certainly in the court process, there are going to be a need for more resources from Department of Justice to deploy more immigration judges, to deploy more support staff to support the increase in the workload that we think will be coming down their way, because we're identifying more people through this initiative. But we also reach out to Department of State, because ultimately our goal is to remove these individuals, and we have to work with the Department of State because they have the relationship with the foreign governments, the countries that are going to be receiving these people back, and kind of signal to them what we think the volume is going to be. Look at some of the mechanisms to speed up the removal process by notifying these countries sooner rather than later, requesting travel documents for individuals, passports basically for individuals to go back to their home countries. And so we're addressing those issues now as opposed to when it's already happening. And so we've had, as I said, the luxury to do that, to kind of think through some of those challenges, but then come up with some solutions and then start to engage the partners and stakeholders in that. And so a lot of that's been at the federal level. At the local level, there hasn't been much of an impact because we're leveraging an existing infrastructure. It does not require people to expend or jurisdictions to expend more money to use the system. It doesn't require people to be retrained on the system. It leverages a process and policies that are already in place, and so there's really no impact to them. But where the impacts are more on the federal side, and the two examples that I illustrated are very critical to us to make sure that we that the people that we identify actually have their day in court and have it in the most expeditious manner as possible. And then when we have to remove individuals, making sure that the countries that are going to receive them are aware of who they are. They need to know who these individuals are, when they're going to come, and any other information we could provide to them. So, you know, we're kind of, as I said, trying to tackle some of those issues now as opposed to the end of fiscal year 2013, where we could see hundreds of thousands of people go through this system.
To elaborate further on that, can you tell us how data and analytics are being used to predict and forecast locations where there are likely to be numbers of current or future criminal alien populations? And how much you're basing that on past experience and trends over time? And then how is that helping manage the detention and removal activities?
Well, I think I mentioned earlier that there wasn't a lot of data on criminal aliens in the United States. We had to rely on a number of different agencies and institutions for this data and kind of bring it all together and make sense of it. But data is key. Collecting this kind of data, analyzing this data, getting your hands on this kind of data is very important for us because, again, we need to understand the size of the problem. We need to understand if there are going to be changes in this population. Over the past couple of years, we forecasted a drop in the criminal alien population because there was a drop in the illegal population. And so, you know, we kind of connect those two and make sure our forecasts don't go in a direction that is contrary to what is actually happening. So, again, having data and getting access to it is key to us. We don't rely on it 100% to make all of our decisions, but it helps us get, I think, to the right decision. I think part of the modeling and simulation that we do has a bigger influence on the trends going forward, in particular policy changes, statutory changes. If the law were to change, how would that impact the criminal alien population? If we were to take a different policy stance, how would that impact? And so we have that ability to do, and I don't like to say what-if scenarios, but I think a lot of people understand that term. And so kind of play with those different different game changers and to see what those impacts are. And so again, then we can make some thoughtful decisions about how we need to proceed, or at least tee up some issues to the policy makers and say, maybe you should consider this. And so we're getting smarter about what we have available to us and how we use it. For this particular program, it's allowed us to demonstrate those capabilities to our brothers and sisters across ICE in the other law enforcement programs to say, hey, this is a tool that could help you do your planning, help you think through operations a little bit better, help you think about how you should manage your resources and deploy your resources. So we get very excited about talking about the modeling and simulation, and then we're hoping that other components within ICE will leverage that and see the value of thinking and using data in that way.
So speaking of helping other components across ICE, how and in what way are you reducing the amount of time criminal aliens spend in ICE custody and increasing the speed with which they're removed from the United States?
Well, it's our understanding, or at least our belief, that by identifying individuals very early on in the process, you will cut down the amount of time that they spend in detention. The program's been in place about 18 months, so you know I can't say that we've seen significant reductions in time. But again, going from several days to making identification to making an identification an hour, we certainly expect to see those times in detention come down. I believe in the past fiscal year, we've cut maybe about a day and a half to the amount of time an individual stays in ICE detention. So we think it's having an impact. I think as we look across all of the processes, we can see further reductions in the amount of time an individual stays in ICE custody.
Once you remove a criminal alien, you want to make sure that these criminal aliens do not return. Would you tell us about your efforts in preventing reentry of criminal aliens?
Well, a couple things, and this is where you have to, you know, work department wide with CBP, ensuring that you know they have a strong defense at the border and at our ports of entry, ensuring that when we remove an individual, that information is put back into the system, and it's basically the ident system. They leverage the ident system, and so when they make the encounters, they know who this individual is. So it's important for us to ensure that the information that we're collecting when we take a removal action, it gets into the system in real time, because we do know some of these individuals do come back. So making sure that happens is key. The second thing is reentering the United States after you've been removed is a federal offense. It's a felony. And so what we consider some of the more egregious cases where individuals are coming back multiple times, we prosecute those individuals at the federal level. And for some of those prosecutions, the sentence could be somewhere around 20 years. It just depends on the number of times an individual has tried to or has reentered the United States after they've been removed. But that is one of the ways we are trying to curb that recidivist behavior, is through prosecution and serving a sentence for committing that type of crime. We've increased the number of prosecution officers across the country. We started off with just a handful of folks in Los Angeles and New York, and now every field office, we have 24 field offices throughout the country, has a prosecution team of at least 10 individuals. So the individuals that are being encountered by our law enforcement officers and then come into the immigration proceedings, we look at their records, we looked at to see if they've been removed before, and then we work the U.S. Attorney's Office to determine whether or not we should proceed with a prosecution.
Dave, you've done a terrific job outlining the strategy that is Secure Communities. What are you doing to inform the public or make outreaches to the public to illustrate the benefits of this program, but also to underscore that this program is assisting you to enforce current law?
Well, I think we've had a pretty comprehensive strategy on just the outreach and communication. Certainly being part of this show is one of the ways we get our message out. When we visit the communities where we want to activate or deploy the biometric capabilities, we meet with local law enforcement, but we also meet with the community. And I personally have gone out and met with some of the non-governmental organizations, some of the immigrant advocacy groups, to talk to them about the program, again, what it is and what it isn't and what they can expect. We've participated in a number of national conferences. We participate in some even regionalized or local conferences with state legislators, with the governors, with other law enforcement officials. We try to take advantage of all of those opportunities to get the message out. We've, I think, aggressively met with our folks on the Hill, our elected officials on the Hill, to talk to them about our strategy and about our initiatives. We use the internet, the electronic media, as much as we can. We're looking at different ways to again, deliver that message. We haven't been shy about it, I guess is the point I'm trying to make. We're very transparent with what we're doing. We certainly emphasize that this is an authority that we have, that it's very focused on criminal aliens, and that our effort will be to ensure that individuals who commit crimes and very serious crimes don't have a chance to do it again. And so we want to ensure the public that this is really a public safety initiative, and we're serious about it, and we think we have a pretty good approach to accomplishing that.
What does the future hold for ICE's Secure Communities Program? We will ask Dave Venturella, Executive Director of the Secure Communities Program within the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.